lost my parents young. I've lost really good friends. I've sat with so many people through their stories, and gosh, it just makes me want to live more, you know? Just think about how when we get sad, liquid comes out of our eyes, you know? So like when we get angry, we sweat and our hearts race. We have a physical reaction to all of our emotions. Grief is no different. In fact, it's even bigger.
Anything that no one's asked you yet about this book?
You're the first person to ask me about it, so I don't know. No one had asked me anything that you just asked me.
Awesome, awesome. I love having original questions. Claire Bidwell Smith is one of our nation's treasures when it comes to grief and loss. She is out currently with her fifth book, Conscious Grieving. Every single book that she has written is absolutely amazing. She has one more coming out, and she is just such a beautiful soul, and her ability to help you understand grief, help you move through your grief, and help you better understand your grief is just incredible. I'm so excited to have her back on the podcast today, where we talk about her new book, Conscious Grieving, which I share on the episode, is a Bible for grief. It has every resource you could need in it. It really helps you to see what you need throughout grief. It helps you to understand the process of grief and gives so many resources and ways to help move through your grief. So we talk about all of that on today's episode. We talk about spirituality and mediumship as a tool for grief. And it's just a joyful, beautiful conversation with a beautiful woman that I now can call a friend. So here is today's episode of Life, Death, and the Space Between with Claire Bidwell.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Well, Smith. Well, welcome, Claire, again to Life, Death, and the Space Between.
Thank you, Amy. I'm so happy to be here and see you and talk to you.
Likewise. And you just told me this is your first interview for your new book, Conscious Grieving, which is, as far as I'm concerned, the Bible of grief books at this point. I read it. As I do every book, and wow, it literally has every single thing you need. If you are, I mean, really anybody, I think it applies to anybody because I think everybody is grieving throughout their lives. And we've talked about this before, but if you are grieving the loss of a loved one, this is a must have book. It is your, is it fourth or fifth? Cause there was like a workbook in between. So I didn't know.
It's my fifth book.
Fifth book.
Yeah.
I know there's a sixth one coming out cause you were working on three the last time we spoke, but let's get into the nitty gritty of this because there's so many tidbits that I want my listeners to be able to take away from today, but also to be motivated to go and check this out because there's such valuable content in here. And also for clinicians as well, I think it is, it's essential to understand grief and grieving through this lens, through specifically the grief and loss lens. But tell us what, I feel like consciousness is a big buzzword right now. I use it a lot, consciousness, awareness. So many people are waking up, they're becoming more present in many aspects of their life. How do you see grief as something that fits into this consciousness paradigm?
It's a great question. You know, I think I really chose that word with intention because I also feel like that's what we need for grief more is intention. I think grief for a long time has felt like this thing that is just happening to us, but really it's the loss that happens to us. And the grief, we get to choose how we enter into it, how we move through it, how we embody it, how we seek support for it, how we learn from it. And so I think just using the word conscious, like you said, it's about waking up to it. Grief is something that we will all experience in our lives. And we already have. We experience grief early on. You know, we lose friends, we change schools, parents get divorced, we move, you know, houses and lose pets. And we grieve from the very beginning, all sorts of things, change and loss. And yet we sometimes think that we don't really grieve until we go through a really big loss of a person. And then we're starting to really reckon with what is grief. And I think so often we're blindsided by it. And it feels like this thing that is just on top of us. Yet I believe we have a lot of agency and a lot of opportunity within grief.
And you've really been at the forefront. You lost both of your parents. They died when you were young. And you are really kind of changing the traditional paradigm of grief. I think for so long, people looked at Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's work as grief work, which it really wasn't. It was around death and dying and kind of morphed into the grief space. Mm-hmm. But you have laid out for us in this book four steps, four kind of ways to move through grief. And you talk about, you start with entering grief. What does it mean to enter into grief? And I really love how you separated grief and loss. Loss is the experience that we have, and then grief is what happens to us as a result of that loss.
Yeah.
So what does it mean to enter into that grief space?
I think often the entering into it is unexpected. Even when we have a loss that's anticipated, the grief is so much bigger sometimes and so much more unwieldy than we imagine. And we enter into it with a lot of pain and anguish and shock and disbelief. And we have to kind of begin to find our bearings. We find ourselves within the grief and it can feel very overwhelming. And this is where I think people get stuck in the idea that it's this thing happening. But my second step is about really engaging with it. So the entering part is about finding your bearings within it, understanding what's happening, understanding what's normal, that it's okay to feel overwhelmed, that it's okay to begin to feel all these life changes. And then we begin to engage with it. And that's where we start to make choices about how we're going to be with our grief. And one of the things that I'm always talking about grief is how much longer it lasts than people realize. And so engaging with it is this choice of how we're going to carry it with us. Because often when we go through a significant loss, we carry that grief for a lifetime, perhaps. You lose a child, a spouse, a parent, a sibling, you know, like a really big and integral person in your life. Like that's something you carry forever. You may not be actively grieving all the time, but that grief lives within you and it surfaces here and there, sometimes decades after a loss. And so how we choose to engage with it and carry it is really important.
And where, when you break down in here, the different buckets of grief, I call them buckets. Can you speak to some of those? Because I think some people often think, well, I'm not grieving because, or I'm not feeling this, so that means I'm not grieving. Mm-hmm. And you talk about anticipatory grief, complicated grief, ambiguous grief, disenfranchised grief, and collective grief. Can you speak maybe just to a couple of those and how we might find ourselves in those buckets, even if we aren't necessarily thinking about a specific loss that we experienced.
Yeah. I think that grief, I think it's portrayed in one very certain way in our culture, on television and movies and books even, about, you know, you're sad and you're crying and that's kind of what it is. And you're in mourning for a period of time. But grief can look like so many different things. I mean, grief can look like anger and anxiety and irritability and jealousy and envy and fatigue. It can look like energy and, you know, fury and a lot of just different ways that we can embody it. But often too, because of the way that our culture holds grief and the way that our culture shows it to us, we disenfranchise our own grief. To disenfranchise grief, that means you're just not recognizing it as grief and you're not recognizing your loss as significant. And you can see this happen with obvious ones, or like loss of a pet or perhaps divorce. Even if you wanted the divorce, you might be grieving the end of your marriage or the changes that are happening. But because that isn't a readily recognized grief, it becomes disenfranchised and you yourself begin to dismiss it and attribute whatever you might be feeling to different characteristics, maybe your personality or thinking that you're doing something wrong because you're feeling this.
I feel like life transitions probably falls in that
absolutely
category. And I think life transitions don't get enough.
Retirement, empty nesting, health changes, going through an illness, you know, we
even
lose
getting
pieces
married,
of our identity.
I feel like couldn't
becoming
that be
a
grief,
mom.
Like, right.
Yeah. Losing this life that you had before that. Absolutely.
And so we always think of it as we lost something rather than we might have gained something, but also lost something in that experience.
Loss is about change. And change is not usually very easy for us human creatures. We like to
like it. We like homeostasis.
We do. We like to be able to think things are predictable and certain and controllable, and none of it is. But we live in that illusion a lot of the time.
Well, and I think something else that you really lean into in this book is physicality of grief. Mm-hmm. And so much in this, I mean, there was, as I was reading the book, there's so much now, I think, that's getting incorporated as we're learning more in the psychology space around what it means to embody these experiences from a physical standpoint. And how do you see, or what do you see in your work as how grief might show up physically for people in their physical bodies? And what do you recommend people do in order to work with that, or how might they identify it specifically?
Yeah, I think we really are starting to finally connect the dots around our physicality and emotions, but it's taken a long time. And I think we're still not so great at recognizing it. But I mean, just think about how when we get sad, liquid comes out of our eyes. You know, so like when we get angry, we sweat and our hearts race. You know, like we have a physical reaction to all of our emotions. Grief is no different. In fact, it's even bigger. So we're carrying so much grief within our bodies. A lot of times you see a lot of anxiety, you know, just feeling on edge, nervous, racing heart, stomach clenching, sweating. Sometimes you feel just that utter heaviness. People report feeling an actual heartache in some grief, you know, and that's very real. I think it's really important to tend to our physical selves when we're grieving. A lot of people will stop eating, will stop sleeping well, will stop exercising, will stop hydrating, caring about their nutrition when they're in grief. And that's kind of the last thing we should do. We should be really tending to ourselves almost as though we're wounded. You know, when we can take care of our physical self, I think we can better withstand and have bandwidth for the emotions that we're experiencing. When we're not taking care of our physical self and you're experiencing that much emotion, you're just going to fall apart, you know? And so really kind of caring for ourselves, I always like to remind people, you know, it really is like you're physically wounded, like rest. If you want to sleep all day, that's okay. Your whole body, your physiology is reacting to this loss. And it's really important to take care of yourself.
Well, when I think of loss too, I remember when my aunt died and going home and coming home from college and hugging my mom and putting my arms around her and feeling the fragility that it seemed like she, everything about her seemed weak. Like her body was much thinner. You could tell she hadn't been eating. like all of these physical expressions of mm-hmm. the sadness that she was carrying with her.
Yeah.
And it's just so, it's just so amazing to me how we've still sort of separated. And even as you're talking and I'm thinking about all the patients that I see, and when we go through kind of what are the symptoms of what you're experiencing, right? And they describe mm-hmm. symptoms of anxiety. And then we sort of move on. And we never necessarily really ask, like, what sort of transitions might you have had recently?
Right.
What have you been experiencing in your life? Because I think so much of it is likely tied to grief. As you're talking, unexpressed grief, unprocessed grief.
I ended up in the ER right around the time my mother died when I was 18, and I was having a panic attack, and I just felt like I was going crazy and I couldn't breathe. And I just thought, you know, the world was ending. And it was in so many ways, you know, for me with my mother gone. But in the ER, they just ran tests on me and they checked me out and they asked me a million questions all about my physiology, but nothing about what was going on for me personally. And then they sent me on my way telling me I was just someone who has heart palpitations. And so I thought there was something wrong with me aside from my grief, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I was just working with someone as well who just transitioned out of a job, mm-hmm. retired, and all these physical symptoms started. And not one person ever said, what's going on in your life?
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, and to me, it was like blaringly obvious that this was a huge connection in terms mm-hmm. of loss of identity and what that meant and losing friends and, you know, everything that was your day, your life.
Yeah.
And yet no one touched it. And it's like, how mistreated are people then being because we're assuming it's all of these other things?
Yeah, of course.
When so often there's just so much emotion behind what we're physically experiencing.
I think yoga is great in grief, just being in your body, stretching, opening it. You don't have to go to a rigorous yoga class. You can go, you know, to just like do some heart openers and restorative poses. Massage is really good. I always tell people when they're getting a massage in grief to imagine like actually some of the grief being massaged out of their muscles, mm-hmm. where they're holding it in their chest or their shoulders or their hips. And acupuncture is amazing for grief, just kind of shifting around some of that energy. Mm-hmm. But again, nutrition too is really important. And it's often something that people discard very quickly in the beginning mm-hmm. of grief.
Mm-hmm. When you're engaging with grief, part two, mm-hmm. What is there a specific, well, first, when do you say someone should seek out treatment for grief? And is there a specific modality that you recommend for people when they are kind of searching and don't know where to look first?
I think you can seek out support for grief as early as the first week if you want, but also a decade later if needed. You know, I think some of us really try to tuck our head down through a big loss and then realize years later that it's, you know, there's a lot there that we never processed and it's playing out in various ways that we need to go back to and do some work around. But I often find people seek me out, you know, in the first few months or first year of a loss. It's when they come through that initial shock and it's like you've been dropped onto a new planet. And in the beginning, you're learning how to breathe and just find your way around. And then you kind of start to accept the reality that you're in this place and you realize that you need help. And so people will come in around that time. And some people have a lot of really complicated stuff to work through. And so they expect different emotions, but they can't get to those because they need to work through guilt or regret or anger or complicated relationship with someone. And those are pieces that really need to be talked through and worked on. I think there's amazing grief support out there. You know, when my mom died 27 years ago when I was 18, there wasn't anything like there is now. There are coaches and therapists and support groups and online and in person and books and podcasts and meditations that you can download. There's so much available. And I think it's important to find what speaks to you. Some people really like to be in community with their grief. It can be so healing to be around others who are going through a similar loss. Some people aren't ready to hear about other people's losses or talk about their own in front of others. So one-on-one work is really helpful for them. Sometimes people do everything all at once, you know, mm-hmm. they're in a support group, they're in one-on-one, they're reading the books and taking a writing class about grief. And they're just, you know, some people really like to dive head straight into it and like try to tackle it. But grief isn't necessarily something you can tackle. I think, mm-hmm. I think it's really important to wake up to it, recognize it, really start to pay attention to it. I encourage people to invite their grief in, get to know it. I think it's really here to teach us a lot. It's so painful sometimes. Yeah. Some losses, there's so much anguish and heartbreak and yearning. I work with a lot of moms who've lost children, and there's just so much immense pain. And so when you talk about grief being here to teach us something or transform us, there are times in your grief when you're not ready to hear something like that. And that mm-hmm. makes sense. That's understandable.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one for me too. Anytime I've worked with patients who have lost children or mm-hmm. even imagining it for myself, right? It feels wrong. It feels like the most primitive pain one can yeah. imagine. And it's just excruciating to sit yeah. with people when they're in that space, because as a mother, you can't help but, have such deep empathy and compassion.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
For it.
It's true. And so when you when I talk about, you know, grief being this opportunity and this transformative experience, it's not really that in the beginning or for a long time for people going through a loss like that. And for many of us, any kind of loss, sometimes in the beginning, it just feels like you don't even want to be here without that person. You don't want to think about transforming or the opportunities or benefits and positive growth that will come. However, inevitably, maybe it's years, decades later, you will find that we do grow through grief. We grow so much. It asks so much of us. It asks us to really evaluate what matters to us, what's meaningful, who do we want in our lives, what do we want our lives to be like. And so there's a lot of change that happens after a big loss. And not all of that change is negative. There's some really amazing things that can come from it. Mm-hmm. I've seen so many clients, you know, come through a big loss and realize they're not living the life they want to live. And going through that loss becomes an impetus for really making changes that are beneficial and beautiful and hopeful.
If you love the show, there are several ways you can show the love. You can go to patreon.com at Dr. Amy Robbins, just put in my name, and support the show in any monetary amount you feel comfortable. $5, $10, $20 a month makes the world of difference to me. So I would appreciate if you could support the show. If you're already supporting the show, there aren't enough ways to put into words how grateful I am for that support. It literally has made such a difference to me, and it is what keeps this show going. So thank you so much. Also, make sure you're subscribed anywhere you can get the show. You are following me on Instagram. Please subscribe to my newsletter, DrAmyRobbins.com, where I do bi-monthly soul wisdoms. I'm going to be getting back to that. I took a little break, but they are coming back. And also, you can follow me on Instagram at Dr. Amy Robbins. That is where I'm the most active. That's the social media platform you can find me on the most frequently. And just reach out. Let me know your thoughts on a podcast. Share the podcast with friends, whomever you think would be interested in this topic. Just please pass it along. And thanks as always for your support. And meaningful, really meaningful. Mm-hmm. I mean, if anybody follows you, you know, you speak about this in your posts online, but you can see the fullness of your life through everything you do. I think you, I watch you with your kids and how you embrace friends and family. And there's so much love that it seems like, and I mean, we don't know each other well, but we've had several conversations and hopefully we'll continue to know each other better over time. But it just seems so clear to me that those moments that defined you, your loss, has really led to you having like this beautiful, full life filled with people you love who love you.
Yeah, absolutely. I really take very little for granted, and I try to soak up as much life as possible, just knowing our time is limited. I've lost my parents young. I've lost really good friends. I've sat with so many people through their stories, and gosh, it just makes me want to live more, you know? And a lot of the people I know who do this work, who work in hospice or death doulas or grief therapists, you know, it is a byproduct. It just makes us want to embrace life even more.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how I feel about it too. It's like you see, and I think sitting with anybody in their pain and anguish, you just see suffering and you know that it comes for all of us at some point. So rather than worrying and waiting about it, make the best of the life that you have when it's not in that place, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
When does grief turn into more? Like, is there a tipping point where it becomes anxiety or depression? Like I said earlier, could often be grief, but when does it really reach that point where it is beyond just grief?
I think when we are not acknowledging our grief, when we're not making space for it, and sometimes we're not making space for it, and sometimes our community and our family and our culture is not making space for it. Sometimes it's both. But when we do that, when we don't make space for it, when we don't open up to it, when we don't let ourselves fall apart, when we don't let ourselves cry, when we don't let ourselves really feel all the grief, then it gets all knotted and twisted up and it spills out in anger, it spills out in anxiety, we get stuck in it. There's a lot that happens when we lose someone where often there's something unaddressed, there's something left unsaid, undone, you just needed more, wanted more time, there was something that you just didn't get to with that person, and it feels like that's impossible to change or shift. And so we try not to acknowledge it. We try to just not think about it. But really, I feel like there's so much that can happen even after a person is gone. And I know you know this. Like, there's ways we can make amends with someone even after they're gone. There's ways we can forgive ourselves. There's ways we can continue the relationship with them on a spiritual and just internal level. And that's not something that's readily talked about in our culture. So people don't think that's available. And when we don't think that's available, that's where we get stuck, right? Because we're just walking around with that stuck feeling of guilt or regret or, you know, not knowing how to move that. And that's when things get complicated.
I love that you actually mentioned specifically mediums. You mentioned the afterlife in the book. Mm-hmm. How do you see that, or what does that look like in your work? Do you bring that into the work specifically? Do you wait for other people to bring it up? Because I do think it is very common for people to have visitations after, mm-hmm. not all people, but a lot of people have visits. They have experiences that feel unexplained. They can't understand. And there doesn't seem to be many people in this space that allow for that to be something that gets addressed or talked about. And it can be a very, very powerful tool for healing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that one of the missing stages of grief, if you want to put them into stages or, you know, talk about that, which people do still, is, you know, spiritual growth and questioning. And I think it's really hard to go through a big loss and not wonder, where's my person? Can they see me? Will I see them again? Are they okay? Can I still connect with them? It doesn't matter how you were raised, what religion, it doesn't matter what your faith is. It doesn't matter, lack of any of those things. It's really hard to not enter into that space where you want to know where your person is. And so from that point, I engage with a lot of my clients, almost all of them in that realm, you know? So where do you think your person is? What do you think happens when you die? Do you feel connected to them? Sometimes that moves into the space of psychic mediums, the afterlife, kind of more of that dimension. Sometimes it's religion. Sometimes it's just an internal connection. I think, continuing bonds theory is all about how do we continue our connection with the person that we lost. There was a period of time in the psychology of grief when we really thought it was important to move on and let go of our person. And we finally figured out around 20 years ago that that was not helpful and that we actually need to find ways to stay connected to them. And I've seen profound healing happen when people have a really great medium session and can feel like they are really connecting with their person and that their person is somewhere else and is okay. I've seen that become an entry point for them to do their own spiritual work, where they don't even have to necessarily see another medium or continue to go, but they now feel able to open up that door within themselves of, you know, how do I connect with them? How can I talk to them and feel them and bring them into my life? And I think that that's such an important part of grief. After my mom died, I was in so much pain over her death that I just couldn't bear the thought of her, like of any kind of other version of her. I didn't want to open up to this spiritual idea of some ethereal connection with her. I just wanted her back in the mm-hmm. flesh, to be my mom, take care of me.
Right, in the physical form.
Yeah. And so for a long time, I just shut that idea out. But I was hurting so much. You know, I had this real existential anguish that I was grappling with. And in many different ways, for many different reasons, I finally began to open up to my spiritual side and to explore that realm. And that looked like a lot of things, a lot of psychic mediums, but a lot of other stuff too. And finally found my way into having a whole new relationship with her and with my father and the other people I've lost. And that's been a very healing part of my journey of grief.
Mm-hmm. And I think I shared this with you before. I actually went back last night to try to find the email I sent you. I mean, it was probably, when did you write after this?
It came out in 2015.
Okay. So I think I don't know if I picked it up in an airport or I had brought it with me, but I remember sitting on the plane crying and sending an email because you were the only, at that point, the only other therapist that I knew of that I could find who was in this space, who was actually talking about these things. Mm-hmm. And I had had this experience and spent, 15 years feeling like, why is no one talking about this? And how do I even begin to talk about this as a therapist, that this is, that it was so healing for me, that it brought up so much for me, that it really was the end in a lot of ways to a lot of anxiety I was experiencing.
And so much shame and stigma around that. I wrote an article for the New York Times, I think in 2015, that they published. It was all about the validity of seeing psychic mediums when you're grieving. And I got a lot of really positive feedback, but also obviously some negative feedback. But I started down that road because my clients were going. I was a young therapist seeing people in grief, and they were going to see psychic mediums, not all of them, but here and there, and they would come in to talk about it. And I didn't even know how to think about it. I'd never seen one. I didn't know what to do and how to process that. So I set out to go see some for myself and just see what it was like. And that set me off on a whole journey that's in that book.
That ended up as a book. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it is, I think it can be like you said earlier, that the loss becomes an opening for growth.
Yeah.
And I think also the spirituality, if you go that route, and again, this isn't for everybody. I'm sure you have people in your work. I have people in my practice who are like, I don't believe in that. When you die, you die. That's it. And I'm not there to push my belief system on anybody.
That's fine.
Yeah. I'm like,
okay. I never bring up psychic mediums unless my clients do. And then I'm happy to talk about it, but I don't really bring it up or offer it.
Well, it's funny because sometimes I'll say, I'm like, I do not like to self-promote. I do have a podcast that touches on a lot of grief stuff. It also touches on some other stuff you might not be interested in. So just pass by those. Or if you're interested, I can send you some of the episodes specifically on grief. Because I don't want people to feel like this has to be the way you grieve or it has to be.
And there's many ways to, you know, develop that spiritual or internal relationship with someone. Mm-hmm. I always give such a simple example. You know, it's been so long that my mom's been gone, but I knew her so well and I had her for long enough that I know her so well that I could think, you know, I could ask her a question, like, what would she think of the outfit I'm wearing today, you know, and I know how she would answer it and what she would say. And she would tell me I'm wearing too much black and I need more color. And, you know, just but like that version of them lives within us and it's there and it's accessible. And I think that we need to lean towards it, not away from that. And so I'm always encouraging my clients to find whatever form helps them stay connected. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just honoring someone. How do we honor them? For that same afterlife book, I spoke to a rabbi for about a year and he told me one of my absolute favorite things about the afterlife. He said in Judaism, there's not a big emphasis on the afterlife being a place that we go. It's more of who we were and the values we embodied and the work that we did here, how that continues on after we're gone. So the afterlife can just be as simple as me honoring who my father was. He was very generous. He was very like thoughtful and helpful. And every time I go out of my way to embody those values, that's his afterlife. And I just think that that's so beautiful.
And really heart opening, heartfelt, like all of the things that you say often with grief happen with the heart. The heart aches, the heart shuts down, the heart closes off. And those all seem like beautiful experiences to open your heart.
Absolutely. But you've got to find a way to get through and sit with the pain in the beginning because it's immense and it's scary. It's so scary sometimes. And so finding support, you know, really finding people to walk with you down that path of grief, hold your hand, see you, witness you, you know, just be there with you. I think about the word companion a lot. I can't fix people's grief. I can't take it away. I can't even take it on for them, but I can be their companion as they sit and walk through it. Mm-hmm. And I think just being able to feel that feels really good and is really helpful and allows people to be able to hold their stuff more than they feel able to.
Yeah, I'll never forget. I saw Dan Siegel once speak. I fell in love with him. He was on the stage. I'm like, oh my God, I love you. And he talked about, we're all fellow travelers. Ram Dass says this too in a different way, right? We're all just walking each other home. And he was talking about therapists just being fellow travelers, maybe just have a different perspective or, you know, a little bit, you're not going to get pulled into it necessarily in the same way that someone else might or might not be able to tolerate.
Yeah,
your pain.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh yeah. It's so hard to ask our family members or friends to tolerate our pain because they don't like to see us in pain. Not that I like to see people in pain, but it's different, you know, when it's in a kind of outside party. It's so hard for our loved ones to witness our pain and our grief.
I have a question about comparison grief. How, I think this comes up for people when it feels like there's like a hierarchy of who's supposed to be the saddest about a loss. Mm-hmm. How do you help people in that space if it wasn't, you know, maybe their spouse, child, parent? Those seem to be like the three kind of, you win the prize of you get to grieve the hardest. Yeah. But then I think often people feel like there isn't a space for them. If it was a friend, if it was a colleague, if it was a sibling, I feel like sibling grief sometimes
that's a really disenfranchised win.
Yeah, because obviously parents or partners or whoever it is. And yet like siblings to me are the people who've been with you the longest. They're your, you know, people have known you through everything. They've experienced it with you. So how do you help people who feel like my grief shouldn't matter or shouldn't feel as overwhelming as X person who lost this loved one?
I think, unfortunately, it's really common. And I think a lot of it's due to our culture, as we've been talking about, not recognizing certain grief or certain losses. But so that's a part of it, is really talking with someone about helping them see that their loss is not being recognized on, you know, the outside community and world. And then asking them, what would it mean to really let yourself own this loss as big as you feel it? I think sometimes we ourselves do that comparison loss because it's almost easier to worry about other people and think about other people's losses than to sit with our own. And sometimes what's really underneath that is this fear of opening up to our loss, you know? So we kind of deflect and talk about other people's or think of, oh, mine's not as big as that one. Mm-hmm. When really they're just afraid to sit and really feel all the things that they're feeling. Mm-hmm. But we have grief all the time for people that we've never met. I mean, you turn on the news and you're suddenly, you know, having feelings for people you're seeing going through all kinds of things, or a celebrity or public figure who dies and you didn't know them personally. And you think you shouldn't feel what you feel, but you feel that. And we should allow for that and honor it. I think there's this culture of like grief shaming and toxic positivity. It drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of it online, you know, mm-hmm. people yelling at other people because, you know, their stuff isn't as big as others. It's just a lot of outside noise. Find a way to honor your grief, even if it's private, even if it's small. Light a candle. Let yourself think about that person or that loss. Let yourself cry. You don't have to tell anybody. You don't have to explain it, but do it for yourself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll never forget when Sandy Hook happened. Mm. I think I spent probably a good 3 or 4 months in therapy processing.
Yeah. Yeah.
These were not people I knew, but my daughter was the age that those kids were. And it just like shook me to my core. I had a bunch of
clients come to my office after that happened for the same reason.
And I think that as a culture, it would be so beautiful if we could just pay attention more to these experiences of the collective that we might have, mm-hmm. because I think it connects us to our humanity in so many ways. Like, it's mm-hmm. just like your pain is my pain, even if I don't know you, if I've never
Absolutely.
Met you.
Yeah. Yeah. Our humanity. It's so important. The collective consciousness out there.
What are you hoping that people take away from this book? There's so much in here. What's sort of your kind of biggest takeaways, would you say?
I just wanted this to be a book that feels really intimate. I wrote it to the reader, to the griever. So I don't talk about myself in it. I talk about myself in the introduction. And then the rest of it is actually addressing the reader. And I just wanted it to be a hand to hold while you're in this, you know, and it's comprised of everything I've learned in these, you know, almost 2 decades of grief work. I went into hospice and then private practice thinking I knew a lot about grief, but I just knew my grief. And I've learned so much more about grief from every person I've sat with. I still learn something new every time I sit with someone. And I really tried to put all of that in this book and just to humanize and normalize the experience of grief, give people permission to be in their grief and give them hope too.
What's book 6?
Oh, we'll see. We'll see. I'm messing around with book 6, but there'll be lots of books. I'm not done. This is how I process the world.
I mean, it's amazing. You spit out these last 3, like one after another, after another, or these 2 and then whatever's coming next.
I had an astrologer once tell me that, like, he looked at my chart. I think this is in the acknowledgments of this book. He looked at my chart and he said, you're here to do 2 things. You've got this in the planet of death and you've got this in the planet of communication, and your whole life, all you will do is communicate about death. And I was like, correct. That's what I'm doing. So this is just what I'm here to do, I think.
It's amazing. Your work is amazing. Anybody who, and you give people so many opportunities to work with you. You have retreats, you have tons of online,
online support groups, one-on-one. I've been training other clinicians in kind of my style of grief. And yeah, I just am trying to provide as much support and conversation and openness about it as I can.
Where can everybody find you?
You can just find everything on my website, clairebidwellsmith.com. It's all there. All the retreats, the support groups, the one-on-one opportunities and events. I'm going on book tour soon, but not to Chicago.
But not to Chicago. Sorry. If you come, I'll interview you if you want to come here.
I would
here.
Love that. We'll make it happen.
Okay. Anything that no one's asked you yet about this book?
You're the first person to ask me about it, so... I don't know. No one had asked me anything that you just asked me.
Awesome. Awesome. I love having original questions.
Yeah. I just want it to be comforting and helpful and useful. So yeah, I hope it becomes that for people.
I think it will be. I can't imagine anything less. It really is. I mean, I've read a lot of books in this space. And I think it really kind of sums everything up in a really beautiful digestible way. So thank you for providing this to the world, for those who are grieving, for those who are working with people who are grieving. And just thank you as always for being you. You're such like a kind, warm, loving human. And I always love when we connect. So thanks, Claire.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you for the work you're doing too. It's so beautiful and so important.
Thank you. Like what you heard today and want to hear more? Wondering what comes next and what it all means? Head over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, or anywhere you get your podcasts and hit subscribe. Also, if you could take a minute to rate and review my podcast, I would really appreciate it. Stay tuned as we continue to explore life, death, and the space between.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.